I call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, March 8, 2018. The first item is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion? And a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion is approved. Next item is roll call. And Commissioner Lucky has notified me that he would not be able to attend tonight's meeting, as did Commissioner Heller did last week, which I failed to note properly. So, with that, Commissioner Heller.
I'm here.
Commissioner Gildersleeve.
I'm here.
Commissioner Von Trapp.
Present.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Ryan.
Here.
Thank you all. We do have a quorum. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Is there a member from the public who wishes to address the Planning Commission on something that is not on tonight's agenda?
Go ahead. You got your first. Oh, God. Just if there's extra exhibits, it'd be nice to share.
Okay. CIP.
Fair enough.
Might clarify that the this is our capital improvement project. This is just info only. We're not going to really be going over that. But you'll note that it's numbered, and it's numbered in terms of priority of projects.
Thank you.
Priority of what?
Priority of projects, those that are likely to happen before others.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the election of Planning Commissioner officers, chair and vice chair. The procedures for this are each one of you can nominate a person for chair and for vice chair.
Point of order,
yes.
Chair. According to this, you were going to do the minutes. Did you do that?
I just saw public comment, and I just made a big line from one and two. Okay.
Sorry, Gary. I had some public comments. I thought the people were going to make some comments. And then I was
Sorry. All right. Go ahead. Please state your name and address for the record. You have 3 minutes to speak.
My name is Thomas Mary, 728 South Cedar Falls Way. I also own a commercial property in North Bend. I'm here partly as a statement, partly as a question, I suppose. I'll just give this to you. This is a letter that I wrote. Back in January, you guys published some proposed amendments to the 18.10.030, this red line document that proposes a bunch of changes to existing zones. I guess partly a question. I've been in touch with Jamie. She's shared some information with me with some closed meetings and some study halls and study sessions and things like that. I guess partially a question which you can answer at the end, I suppose, is has there been any changes or progress on that process? And then I guess the second part is just, I'm not going to go over my entire letter. You guys can read it and distribute it, I suppose. But I'm just concerned. I own a construction business in town. We're in EP1 zone. We've had a heck of a time over about 5 years trying to find a home for us and for ourselves. And finally, about 18 months ago, purchased a piece of property that's in EP1 zone. One of the proposed changes is to remove construction yards from EP1 zone and only allow it in EP2. There's only, I think, about 18 or 20, maybe 22 parcels in the entire city that are EP2. So I've got neighbors on both sides that are all construction contractors, and so it would essentially be saying this wide swath of land that's currently being used for that use is, you know, I guess we'd be grandfathered in some sense, but we would like the ability to improve that land. I mean, the parcel that we bought in particular was kind of a garbage dump, and we're slowly trying to improve that and improve the appearance of the neighborhood. So I guess partly just a question of where are we at in the process. I guess the subsequent question would be, what is the rationale for trying to remove construction yards to just a small area? Also just kind of a process question. So I came to a meeting where you were present, Jamie. I don't know what, is that the planning committee, or so there was
Council committee.
So one of my neighbors just posed the question of, hey, you know, this whole neighborhood was kind of surprised by this. she thought, and I agree with her, that I think there should be some sort of a push of information out to people that might be affected by, and I recognize that what's being proposed isn't a rezone, I recognize that that's something distinct, but in practical terms, it's really affecting what people can do with their land. So I think there should be some sort of a mailer that goes out to anybody that's affected by any sort of change in the use of their property, and I actually own a piece of property in Tacoma also, and about a week after that meeting, I received that in the mail, which is what they're doing in other municipalities and government entities to alert property owners of changes that could be coming. I mean, the response that day was kind of dismissive of that it would be, you know, procedurally impossible or very difficult to do something like that. No, I mean, I do database structure and things like that at work, and it's a pretty simple database and mail merge type of thing to be able to send that out. So, I know there's a new FTE on staff that's like public relations within the last year or so. I think that would be a great thing, maybe to have that person do. Or I just think that people that own property, and like in my case, I'm in my late 30s, I'm going to hopefully be working the next 25 years. I've got a lot of my life's savings and work into this parcel of property. I'd like to kind of be alerted if there's a big, huge, significant change that's going to affect me and my employees and my family and all those sorts of things. So just as from a procedural perspective, there could maybe, I understand that things are posted online, there's Facebook groups and stuff, but I think, an actual mailer for something that's really significant would be appropriate.
Thank you for your comments, and for the record, I am providing Mr. Mary's letter and also the notice that he provided us to staff to distribute in the record.
Through the chair, I'd like to address Mr. Mary's concern, because you're absolutely right, and that is right on. Where we are in the process, and the reason we haven't we've done some public advertising, but not as detailed as you're indicating, and we will do that. We're in the process. There's a whole lot of there are a whole lot of moving pieces here. One of them is the council had expressed some concern about the uses in zones and wanted us to hold a study it as a staff and then hold a study session, a work session at the Planning Commission, and then kind of formalize that up to the council, and we've done that. And in the process of doing that, I noticed, and I made comment to council members who I think there was some limitation of uses that came out of the Planning Commission, but I think it was a little more open to recognizing the kinds of concerns that you have. And when it got to the council, there were some council members that were pushing very hard to really, and I've seen this movement all over the country, because I came up here from Folsom, and I argued for more construction yards and that kind of industrial use that a lot of people don't think is particularly attractive, but I think we could deal with that. I think there are ways you can make it attractive, and construction yards weren't made to be Taj Mahals. They're fairly utilitarian, but there are things you can do to make them look nice. And so when we got to the council, there were a lot of comments about sort of squeezing those uses out, and went way beyond that. I mean, auto-serving uses that the people in the community need. And two points of view came out of the council. That gained momentum and started going along. Then a couple of council members said, wait a minute, I don't want to drive all the way to Snoqualmie to service my car. And we have people in town that are doing it. We have a lot of building, and there are going to be people here that need these kind of things. So we were going through these study sessions, and it was moving in that direction. Now, they asked, because of the differences of opinion and the fact that staff was kind of fighting to preserve some of these uses, they decided to have a let's blow up the zoning map and look at our whole land use plan workshop. And at that workshop, they really started to become more realistic, and they started looking at allowing more of those uses in zones and accommodating them rather than just trying to squeeze them out, because there are some people on the council that felt that some of those older yards looked really bad and that people weren't upgrading them, and that influenced the whole industry, and that's just not right. And so one of the things they've been suggesting, one of the moves that I think has a lot of traction, is to combine the EP1 and EP2 zones, combine them, and loosen the land uses that are allowed up in those zones, and then create a business park zone for the more technology park, more high-end sort of things, or more office-oriented. And that's kind of the direction we're going. And the reason I'm glad we haven't mailed anything out yet is because they're fairly undecided. And if once they got to the land use map, they started focusing, and I started hammering on, you know, they were really focused on the brand, the outdoor brand. And I said, well, that's great, and that has to have a role in this because that's really important to our community. But those uses that support the economy of the city, which are all the commercial uses, have to have some emphasis. I mean, we have economic development in my department. What are we doing by making these kinds of decisions? So I'm pushing them in the direction of looking at the fiscal impacts of decisions. So if you're going to reduce the opportunity for land uses, you're going to slow down commercial use, and you're going to slow down the tax base of the city. And when you start becoming heavy on the bedroom community, how are these new people coming to the community going to get their services if you can't pay for it? So I think the council is kind of going, you know, and rethinking it. And I think it might have been, you're right, we need to notice everybody when these changes occur that's affected. But with the uncertainty, it would have been very confusing to mail something out which was a direction that they decided was the wrong direction. So I'd like to, you know, continue a dialogue with you and with the business community and try to get you folks more engaged in these land use decisions, because we can recommend till the cows come home, but until somebody who owns a business and their family and business is affected presents their argument to the council, it really doesn't drive the point home in a meaningful way. So we are very interested in maintaining those things. And one of the other recommendations they came up with, what I was very pleased with, is to take at the east end of town where we have that green overlay district, which almost gets rid of all of the uses that are allowed in the underlying district, they're going to remove that. And rethinking what the frontage should be. Maybe the frontage should be more commercial and the uses in the back should be more, and you'd be able to then do more with architecture and appearance and all that kind of thing, and then put the industrial uses behind it. One of the big problems we have is that we've interspersed residential uses into the industrial zones. And when I grew up in planning, that was called spot zoning, and it was a no-no. And so we're trying to remedy that. We'll probably remove the overlay and the EP1 zone that is on the south side of North Bend Way, right, if you point that out, yeah, right in that area. Because if we continue to overlay our employment base, we won't have an employment base. But the difficulty is we have a lot of large lots, single family nearby, so we need to buffer it, we need to be sensitive to it. So it's quite a challenge, but we can't leave the business community out of those decisions. It's just not appropriate. So what we're trying to do as a staff is take everything they had in their workshop, go back and look at the work that Jamie did on land uses, reformat how the map should look according to what they want to see. And there are a lot of great ideas in it that are good. And once the map is apparent and we know what the reconfiguration of land uses is, revisit the uses permitted in the zones that implement the land use map. So we're a work in progress right now, and I would encourage you to get a hold of the mayor and the council and be communicating with us and get involved, because we really do want to accommodate the businesses that need to be accommodated. And what you find quite often in land use plan is everybody's looking at how do I create the most beautiful city, and they don't think about the more utilitarian things that you have to have, that they're just part of the fabric. And we need to kind of revisit that mentally, I think, at both the Planning Commission and City Council level, and say, if appearance is the issue, let's get the business community in here and tell them they need to look a little prettier, but let's not eliminate the land uses. So I think we have a very compelling argument. We had to turn a battleship around in the creek, and we've done it mentally. Now we have to implement it. But I really appreciate your comments, and I think they're important. And we just don't have, you know, since you have your Chamber of Commerce in Snoqualmie, and we have a Downtown Merchants Association, we do not have an effective group of business people in this community that we can communicate with. And somehow we've got to get that kind of group going. I mean, the people like yourself that have important businesses in the community have to have a combined voice, you know, so that we can do this. And I think that's part of the growing pains of a small town. So we take it seriously. I think you're right on. Continue to get these kind of communications to us, and we'll take them through the mayor to the council. And I think we're going to do some very interesting and good things in the future. And I think we're going to be able to diffuse some of the controversy we've had over these overlays. If projects are vested, we have to deal with them. So if I think the area you're located in, if I'm wrong, let me know. But I think you're somewhere in this location,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And the problem that we have right now is this project is vested.
Correct.
And it's residential. You're going to have a bunch of residents next to you. So
not me next to John Day.
So, well, we have to get together and figure out how we're going to make this survive successfully and buffer that. If we could kind of wipe the slate clean, I think we'd do things differently, but it's never clean, and we just got to deal with those things. But we're very, very concerned about making sure that the businesses that support what we need in the community. I mean, I'm looking to have a major piece of architecture built on my property, and I want to do it with a local guy. So, you know, we all have those needs, and it's really important that we hear.
And I think you'll get good cooperation from the business owners, you know, provided that we can remain to do some of those things, even if it's on a if it's required or it's voluntary. I know that John would be interested in, you know, what can we do to, you know, help being neighbors with 212 apartments that are going there. And I think we would be very cooperative.
I think there are some good ways to do
parties.
It.
We don't want, you know, we don't want a bunch of noise complaints and this mm-hmm. and that. We want to be good to the neighborhood, so.
Well, let's try to carry this dialogue a little further, but I think you're right on. We do agree with you. There's really not any disagreement, but we certainly don't want to displace businesses. That's not the intent here. So we're very interested in continuing the dialogue, and I hope we can work together to do that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, as long as you reopen public comment. Now I'll make a comment. Rob McFarland, both for my own consulting business, as well as John Day Homes, P.O. Box 2930, North Bend. Really encouraged by the conversation and Dave's comments, and I was at the council retreat and saw that in action, and that's great. So fully supportive. We obviously very much want to be engaged, as Tom's pointing out. We're that immediate neighbor. My ask would be, and I know you're already looking at that, is, but that you're engaging with that business community well ahead of the hearing, so that mm-hmm. they're seeing the proposed changes, understanding them, and having a chance to comment, because too often, and I know that was the reaction of some of my fellow business owners, was that, whoa, we're heading to a hearing, which typically means then they're going to take a vote right after. So that's what really should come.
Right. Yeah. And I think our position at this point is we had to take all that information. They gave us a lot of information at that retreat. And we had to put it together. And, in fact, I just wrote while Jamie was out of the office, you know, it's kind of like voting for the person who isn't there. I sent her an email to collate all of our comments. And then getting those together, where is their consensus? Where are these guys giving us the same direction? Where are they not? And then we have to go back to the council and say, this is what you told us, and this is where you disagree. And so once we get our act together, then I think we can go back out to the business community, and I think we're probably going to defer any discussion on change of uses until we're sure what the comprehensive plan is going to show. Because, you know, that guides the whole process. It's a top-down from the land uses to the zoning to the uses in the zoning. So we do have a lot of work to do to be able to be coherent with you. We certainly don't want to march things out that where there are a lot of disagreement internally and we can't really communicate clearly. So you'll have ample opportunity before we go to hearing to do that. And I think it was very good that we had that retreat, because a lot of the things they were doing in a silo, looking at these land uses without looking at the global picture, was not the right way to do it. If you start with a model you don't like and you start putting it together in a way that you're not going to accommodate the uses you need to back off and go to 30,000 feet and say, what do we want to be when we grow up, and then go to land uses. So that's where we are right now.
And also, just to clarify, I know you probably have to get going soon. Councilmember Kostanich, who's the chair of our CED committee, had previously asked me to put the permitted uses as a topic for their committee meeting, which is this coming Tuesday at 4. And so because we'd started this process of the permitted uses a year and a half into it, and the one you're speaking of, we wanted to, you know, there's a lot of work to do. There's also some fixes to do, and then some themes of, you know, they really are fearful of residential in the neighborhood business, for example. And we have a docket that was requested last year for a car wash, and they just adopted the changes for the cottage zoning, and so there's some clarification edits to make. So the question will be to them, which I think we're going to steer them, like David said, and we've got more work to do, but did you want to close the loop on some of this now? Do we need to think about it more? Does it need to go back to Planning Commission, you know, and have our marching orders to go forward?
As Jamie said, there are going to be some short-term fixes that are good ones that we need to do. But those that will, you know, displace businesses or globally change uses, we're going to defer. We're not ready for that.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of tough when your policymakers are kind of saying, well, this is what we want. We don't want any of that. And you scratch your head and you say, well, how can that be? You know, it just doesn't work that way. And finally, some of them really kind of came to the realization that they were moving in the wrong direction.
I think they have, yeah.
And they really turned the others and said, hey, wait a minute, this isn't right. And so, yeah, you're right, we were going in the wrong direction, but I think we're regrouping and kind of opening the discussion up to be a little more inclusive now. But I would really love it if you gentlemen could organize some other folks, particularly along the North Bend Way corridor, and get a group together and consult with us. Well, it would be great. As a matter of fact, I would very quickly suggest to the mayor that would be kind of a good technical subcommittee for both our economic development efforts and our land use efforts to represent business interests outside of the downtown. You know, because we always focus on the downtown, and we just don't have a viable group to come to us and say, hey, we're the other guys. We're most of the strip. This is where our businesses are, and we just don't have people coming in. And the other thing it would be very helpful with is we have a fairly vocal bunch of citizens who are really anti a lot of the new businesses we're trying to bring in. And we need help from the business community to say, wait a minute, there are other attitudes here, other businesses, other people who have an interest in the subject that should be heard. And it really helps us to have a more balanced discussion and make better decisions if we just don't get bowled over by a few people who are vocal. So I would invite you to organize a group and work with me and the mayor to maybe even have an advisory group that helps us with some of these land use issues. It would be very helpful to the commission, too. I think if you could come to a meeting like this and share your thoughts, it just opens up doors that we may not be thinking about.
Thank you both for your comments. Appreciate it very much. So the next item on our agenda is to approve minutes for February 22nd, 2018 Planning Commission meeting. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
A motion by Commissioner Miller and a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for February 22nd, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are approved. It is unanimous. The next item on the agenda is the election of the Planning Commissioner, Officers, Chair, and Vice Chair. You know, 3 months ago I was all happy about this decision, and now tonight it's really here. I told my wife I'm kind of sad. Shed a tear. You know, what was great about what Dave just did in our dynamics on this commission has been something that I think, you know, Rob kind of did. I did it a little bit better.
Except you forgot the minutes tonight.
I'm just trying to get to my next one. You know, I think what's valuable to this commission and what I think other people have recognized is our ability to just discuss things and be on topic and to talk about topics and not have any personal attacks. We are very thoughtful. You guys come prepared to ask questions, and you've done your research, and I just appreciate that. So it's been my pleasure to be your chair. To the staff, you guys work so many hours, your care and your commitment to the city, it's just amazing. So, you know, you've earned my respect, certainly. But I appreciate everything you've done, so thank you, Kim. Okay, so each person can nominate a person for chair. Voting will be done by raising your hand for the nominee. You may only vote for one candidate. The names are going to be voted on in the order that you nominate, and the office takes effect immediately following the votes. When you want to make your motion, you should say, I nominate blank to be elected as chair of PC or vice chair after we do your chair vote. If only one person is nominated, then we'll have an immediate vote. If that person is required to get a majority vote. If more than one person is nominated, the maker of the nomination can speak in favor of their nominee, and then we will have a vote and in order of those nominees made. If there are more than two, the vote will be by majority for the top two, and then we'll have another vote for the ultimate majority for those two. So if it's three or more, then we'll have a vote to get down to two, and then once we have two, we'll have a final vote for chair. Any questions? I will open up for nominations for chair of the Planning Commission. Commissioner Ryan.
I nominate Scott Heller to be chair. Scott has earned my vote only because he comes prepared. He looks into the issue deeper than the surface. His thoughtful last comments and when he comes to the meeting with, he's always prepared to talk about the subject. And he can make an excellent chair.
Are there any other nominations for chair? Going once. Any other nominations for chair? Okay. We have a nomination for Commissioner Heller as chair of the Planning Commission. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Okay. Commissioner Heller is now nominated as chair of the Planning Commission. Are there nominations for vice chair? Mr. Von Trapp.
I would like to nominate Elizabeth Gildersleeve. I've done an excellent job filling in as necessary, likewise coming prepared and being well-spoken, as well as ever present.
Okay. Any other nominations for vice chair? Seeing none, all those in favor of nominating Commissioner Gildersleeve for vice chair, please raise your hand. Commissioner Gildersleeve is vice chair once again.
Much easier for me.
With that, Planning Commission, I hope to see you at the next meeting, if not live in comment. I am off to school board meeting, so we have to have an executive session. So please excuse me.
Thank you for your service, Gary.
Commissioner Heller.
Thank you. Gary.
Just leave right now.
You are the new chair. You have the floor.
At least I stuck up.
He's just trying to work the end slowly.
Mr. Yeah. Chair, you can't leave just now. I've been sitting here for about 4 years, and I've listened to this yahoo over here for most of those years, but Gary has really earned my respect in his leadership on the commission as chair. He's been a stalwart. He's come prepared in deeply prepared for the subject. And I think that he carries us through the commission meetings every single time we're here in a way that when we come out, we feel like we've done something. Gary, we appreciate your service. You've been excellent. I'm so glad you're on the school board.
Thank you very much.
Get out of here.
All right.
Thank you, Gary.
Scott, email me and we can.
You can only keep that for a souvenir.
All right.
Show the kids.
That's right.
Good night, Gary.
Good night,
Gary.
Okay.
we'll help.
Yeah, you, that could be
we'll
your seat.
Yeah, yeah. You're running this meeting, so wherever you want to sit.
Uh-oh, he's back.
My next meeting back.
So, I don't know if you saw the email, the hearing was published in the paper, but it wasn't posted on our website or posted at our four city locations. So it was an error in on our part, and so we want to meet all of our code requirements. It's noticed for the next meeting. So, and there, I think we have droves of public that are here tonight for that, so...
So
yeah, I guess we are at discussion. Questions, and I can pull up the code so we can kind of look at it together. Following the memo, but basically the summary, which is right after the agenda, is we took this to the Parks Commission last week and went over the regulations with them, not in as much detail as you guys have, but generally they had some good comments and some good input, some of which was incorporated into the comments or into the amendments. They discussed, you know, bonding and fines, like you guys did, and it, and is the minimum $2,500, you know, proposed enough. And then the in-lieu fees.
We might, for members of the public, just sort of introduce the topic. We're talking about the amendments to the section of the code 1910 clearing, grading, and drainage that relate to tree preservation. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that we got into this is that we had a lot of report back from the council that there were a lot of trees going down that they thought shouldn't be, and that the current regulations that we had weren't effective. And so I guess the area that we're trying to negotiate our way through is we realize that a lot of development, when you have clearing and grading, by the nature of the development process, is going to destroy root structures and remove trees in certain areas. And the more compact we are, the more that we leave the areas natural around our city, and it takes a certain amount of work to get utilities in, get streets in. One of the biggest destructors of trees is our storm drainage requirements and our best management practices for bioswales and that kind of thing, because when you put that in, you're taking out a lot of the soil on the site, and you are definitely, with flood conditions, drainage and the way you grade a site and the way it drains is critical. So when you're doing land modification for subdivisions or for commercial projects or for parking lot areas, you're of the nature of the beast going to be removing a lot of trees. And so the idea here is, what kinds of methods can we use to identify the most significant trees in the community, those that we want to protect and that we'll go through, you know, extreme means to protect, and how do we repopulate the community with forest and have a really good, robust urban forest program and still allow development to occur? And that's a really tough area to negotiate and to still be able to make people happy with the amount of trees that are left. So mm-hmm. I think with that kind of background,
right.
You've done some work on this. The Park Commission has done some work on this. And Jamie and Mike spent hours with our contract arborist to really kind of tie down. If we're going to put regulations in here and say we're going to save trees, let's be realistic about it. What, you know, because you can take out, you can leave trees and try to protect them, but in many cases with some species, the root structures extend quite a ways, and you may not kill them when you're grading, and they may look fine for a while after you do that, but they're going to die eventually. So we wanted some good professional help in saying, what can we do and what can't we do? And how will these protective measures affect the utility of the sites? So that's the really delicate area that we're trying to work with. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was good having Jim here at the last meeting. It seemed like you guys all really appreciated his insight and profession. Yeah. So he had a on vacation this week, so he couldn't make the meeting. I think it would be good to have him maybe at our council committee meeting when we introduce this to them. And he's still involved and can help. And in the meantime, he did go out with Rob and met him on his property just to kind of look at things from the new code perspective, even though for that project, it's vested in, under the old code. It's hard, as we talked about at the last meeting, to get an apples-to-apples comparison. I did talk to some other cities and put the notes here in the packet if you guys have questions on those. But getting, so I guess getting back to first the Parks Commission, did you guys have any questions or thoughts on that? They talked about homestead trees. There are some options in the code where we can really provide more language and more protection for those trees. I have an example from Duval that if I would have not been coming from another meeting, I could have copied for you, but really to take that into account when you're designing the site. So there's just different layers of how far you can go with things and how much flexibility you want to have. So that's kind of one idea. But that was it as far as parks. They were generally supportive. And
yes, I did have just a more of a process question to begin with. Mm-hmm. My understanding is what I read is we're going to make a recommendation. The recommendation is going to be for the Parks Commission.
They're not going to make a formal recommendation. Your recommendation is the formal one. You're the formal body. We just wanted them to be involved, and if there was any advisement they had for you guys or for us to take into consideration, we can do that. But no, they're essentially done, and we didn't want them to get into the weeds. You guys are in the weeds, and we invited them to come to the hearing and come to the meetings and be involved.
So then, based on their comment, was the first bullet point of the bonding and fines the minimum it proposed. And I know we'll get to that, but since I wrote it down, I wanted to throw it out there now. I was wondering, if that might not be a deterrent, and do we want to have it be more of a range based on the size of the tree? One inch equals a certain amount of money, or the larger, the more significant.
Just to respond to that, before I left Folsom, we did an update to our ordinance, and we had an arborist on staff, and we had a couple of them in our park and recreation department, as well as on our staff in community development. And we in fact did that. We depending upon the caliper of the tree, if they were removing a tree, we had a progressive rate for mitigation is what we called it, or if somebody took it out illegally, it was a fine. But so we allowed people where it was just not feasible to save trees, and there were what we called the heritage trees that were the really magnificent trees, and we just didn't have any slack with those. Those had to stay, but there were a number of trees that were still fairly substantial, and so they would have the highest mitigation fee or fine if people took them out illegally. And some people would rather ask for forgiveness and find out what they're supposed to do. And then as you got down to the smaller trees, you had a smaller amount that was due. Mm-hmm. The same was true for replacement trees. The larger the tree, the greater the number of replacement trees. And the one thing we learned very well early on, and any nursery will tell you this, is that if you plant trees after a certain age or you transplant trees, their likelihood of survival is decreased the older the tree is. Mm-hmm. And as a developer, I moved a lot of oaks, and we had a survival rate that was maybe 70 to 80% if we really took good care of them. And it depends on the environment that we took them from and the environment that we put them into. So that's a good suggestion, and I think it relates more to the severity of the removal of the tree and the significance of the tree, and it kind of, it doesn't, you know, it's not a one size fits all.
Well, it just, you know, one thing, I mean, think that for the next page, the situation that Vancouver finds themselves in, where it's being cost less than the replacement.
Mm-hmm.
It's costing the city more, so just wanting to avoid that as we discuss this.
Okay.
And it also created a deterrent.
I think that the discussion on this tree issue is missing a huge element, and that is the carbon sequestration issue. In the future, we'll find that a decision about trees will change when we realize with the age of trees stop contributing to the carbon sequestration. Then we realize the value of younger trees as we begin to realize how important they are for carbon sequestration and the length of their life that those trees had before them. So it may not be, I think heritage trees are unquestionably important in terms of what they add to the value of the aesthetics. But in terms of recognizing climate change and these things, as a city, we can promote the public's awareness of climate change. We're talking about carbon sequestration of trees and how we value those trees on that basis alone, if not also just the fact that they're just good to look at, but they're actually doing the work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should, this is a good opportunity for us to bring that before the public in this document.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're spending a lot of time on talking about the aesthetics of trees, but the mechanics of what they're doing for us is also more critical than the aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people in this community that are of that generation that we recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we found a lot of support for talking about trees that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple of the ways that you can incorporate that in the ordinance is perhaps under the purpose section, start mentioning what the purpose of the ordinance is and what the values are that you want to protect. And then the other thing I think that we can do is when you're talking about mitigation for removal of trees, if you start to multiply beyond the number of trees that you've taken out, the number you're replacing, then you're addressing that as well. And if you plant them in the right time of their life, if you will, where they'll be successful, a lot of these, particularly a lot of the conifers, are relatively fast growing. And in this climate, they'll thrive. So maybe what we need to do is to, in the purpose section, talk about the health values of carbon sequestration, and also talk about promoting an urban forestry program in the city. Because one of the things I've talked to Londi about and Mayor Ken is, at some point, given the interest in the brand of the city and the natural environment we're in, we do need to have an urban forestry program. And at some point, we probably need an arborist / urban forester on staff. I worked for the city of La Grande, which was about 13,000 in northeastern Oregon. And we had an outstanding arborist, and we were planting up to 1,000 trees a year in a little town like that. And he just had people going. And he was giving free classes on how to prune trees, things about tree health that we just don't know unless a professional tells us. And he was actually offering those classes for free in the evening because he just loved doing it. So when you get somebody that's passionate about it and is really good with it, and you actually insert in your comprehensive plan the urban forestry program as a fairly major part, an element of the plan or a sub-element that's strong, then you put a lot more emphasis in it, and you can broaden the discussion at that point.
Sure.
So I hear you.
So
Kwame has one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, when you reach a critical mass where you can afford that kind of thing, we need to do it. And that's why we're using the arborist consultant we are now, because we need that expertise if we're going to work with this. I mean, planners do have to be a little bit a jack of all trades, but a master of none. So you have to really bring in the experts to deal with things like that.
Yeah. So you asked the questions. I emailed five or six cities, and Anacortes in Vancouver emailed me back, so I didn't have conversations with them, but I basically gave them a summary of paragraph of, this is what we have now, we have a 10% retention requirement, we're going to go to a tree unit credit, I've heard you do this, how does it work, do you find that you get, you just save a few big ones and you don't save the smaller ones, or is it sometimes the opposite, and so that's, that was my question to the them. And then the city of Kirkland, we had a long conversation, so I was able to ask her a lot more questions as we talked, and she was very helpful. The one theme that came up twice, I think, with Anacortes in Vancouver is, you know, they're starting to look at percent tree canopy coverage throughout the city. We have that in our LID code at the 40%. But it's another tool in the toolbox, basically, you know, is what they were saying, and it's another mechanism. So, you know, maybe we're not quite there yet. We're making steps, but it's something to think about in the future. But it's, like I said, it's one of the tools, and it's hard to, you know, you're picking and choosing and piece of the puzzle.
I like that commentary.
Did you see the table? You see the table in the last packet that tried to compare the old code versus the new? I didn't include that again in this packet, but.
Yeah, I've just kind of been reviewing it as it is, actually,
okay.
And not looking back. Okay. So, at this point, do you guys want to go through the page by page? Is it pretty different from the last meeting?
No, I highlighted the common areas. If there were small corrections and things, we made them in the track change in the... The highlighted areas are areas that we have more discussion about. Or so the first one shows up on page 5. We had a lot of discussion about the definition of significant tree, how we treat it now, versus, you know, the idea that we're going to where all trees matter and all trees get a credit and it's on a scale. And the larger the tree, the more credit up to a certain point. So... we do have references in the code under critical areas and one other spot that say significant tree. So I think we should add that to section 1850 where it is referenced. Otherwise, where we came to was on page 8, the tree unit credits, and that how you get those is by identifying viable trees on the site that are 4 inches diameter breast height, other than our species we've called out. So that's our new measurement of a tree. That was a change that we made.
So for tonight, are we trying to get some sort of approval?
Well, we need to have our hearing, and we need to issue CEPA and do some process. But, right, and that's where... You know, see how you guys are feeling by the end of this meeting.
Are all the underlines you have in here new in this version, or were they in the last version?
In the last version.
Okay.
Yep.
I have a question on page 6. Did you have anything before that?
I did all
the last year. Just in general, looking at the diagram.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful, I guess. I think that my understanding of protection was kind of that drip line, and that's where the perimeter critical root zone is. So it comes to the whole thing and not allowing that inner movement. I guess in general, it just seems like we should either protect the tree or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No.
And,
yeah.
So on the
So going down to line 15, it just talks about as one encroaches into the perimeter CRZ, but not into the interior CRZ, the greater post care of the tree would require to remain alive and stable. And on the next page, on page 7, it talks about post care treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about regular irrigation, misting, root treatment, and special root mm-hmm. hormones, and all these kinds of things. This is for several years. I just think that's unlikely that that would happen. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have a monitor to make sure that that mm-hmm. happens. And it's just, it's, you know, I mean, we've got to make this workable and reasonable, but
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't seem like a good idea to allow activity in there. I mean, unless it's a real specialized rare occurrence, but not mm-hmm. just as a general practice to move to the inside.
Generally, what we've done with landscaping bonding and maintenance requirements is to do a 2-year requirement that people keep it healthy for 2 years. So when you finish, say, a commercial project and you've landscaped an area, you have to bond for the maintenance for 2 years, and we go out and make inspections periodically to make sure it's being done. So you would, for a period of time, you could use the same process to ensure that, particularly with these significant trees that you're trying to maintain, that you would do that at least for 2 years. If it takes a period longer than that, usually if you're if you're working in that zone and you've done anything that will affect the tree, it should show up within a 2-year period of time. You start having symptoms that show up in on the exterior of the tree or sometimes down near the base of the tree. But what I hear you saying is that we should try to prohibit work in that area. And that's what I've done in other communities. What we generally do when you're out on a job site and people are going to be grading, you see the orange fencing around those areas. And we require that remain there. And anybody who does inspections on our site work, guys that will go out and be inspecting water lines and everything, they're instructed to make sure that those areas are protected, that those fences stay up, and that they stay out of that area.
And that's how it is at the site right now. There's a tree that's right up high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's around what looks to be the drip line through the
wire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I heard Jim talk about this, this is his creation here, and we've used it a lot in our recent conditions for projects, is he'll let them encroach onto a certain side of, but, you know, not half of it and not multiple sides of that perimeter root. So it's meant to be limited. I did notice Duval has a 5-year bonding. I had thought, too, we would, you know, maybe we could mimic the 2-year and add it to the landscaping bond.
I saw that. I think it's on page 27 where they talk about maintenance. That was a question I had too, was the length of the monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, generally it's 3 to 5 years, so I would say 2 would be too short. Mm-hmm. I think 3 you'll find, you know, things that are either going to be alive or mm-hmm. not. 5 is definitely will, but I think 2 would be too short. Someone would end up replacing it, like, wouldn't be a developer. Mm-hmm. Probably be the homeowner community or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, later be liable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's what I have.
So no changes that you want to propose? You just
I don't know what the conversation was. I it makes sense if it's more, I guess, just a portion of it as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the specific instance that they would need to do that.
Yeah, it's really going to be on a case-by-case, and I think that's where the recommendation would come from the arborist, depending on the level of interruption in the critical root zone, this is what we recommend. That could drive the bonding, you know, but I think you're going to see it, too, within the first couple years. If there's damage that was done. So we can just make sure we button that language up of the requirement.
What I hear you saying is that if we currently have a 2-year maintenance period in a bond, you'd like to see that longer?
Yeah, if you're referring to later on,
where that.
You know where that.
27, you said?
Yeah, I just saw maintenance responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I didn't see a length of time in there.
Right.
I think there's somewhere else in the document.
Okay. We'll make sure that's in there. I had made a note of Duval 5 years, and that's where our next, one of our next code updates will be the landscape standards, where we also talk about bonding. We'll make sure these two work together and jive together. So
yeah, I think one of the things, there's kind of two different subjects here. One is if you're putting new landscaping in,
mm-hmm.
usually you know after 2 years it's taken, it's okay. But what we're talking about here is a tree, a significant tree of, that you're trying to preserve. And you may have a different regulation for that. And what I hear you saying, Scott, is you'd like to see a longer period than 2 years. That doesn't necessarily mean five, but something longer than two.
Well, I think so. The newly planted trees is in that 3 to 5 year range. As far as the protection, as far as the post-care treatment, I personally think it's not. I don't know how much that really works. It's kind of like trying to patch someone's arm that was just cut off or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, maybe the arborist could explain more about that, mm-hmm. how often they use this post-care treatment, like
right.
brought a tree back or something like that. But just reading yeah. about that. A lot of work when you could have just stayed out of
right.
the area.
Okay.
So, no, I guess I don't have anything specific. It's more of a comment.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts. Okay.
I found that I had a lot of edits.
Three.
Line 19. Where it starts off, clearing means the destruction. I'm saying, who in the heck is writing this? This is not a destruction. This is permitted activity.
Mm-hmm.
So the clearing means the removal of trees. Why have
yeah.
that word
yeah.
destruction?
Yeah.
That sets a tone. It doesn't. This is a permitted activity. And I got a lot of phrases like that coming through here, and I said,
mm-hmm.
really? I didn't write them all down, but I'm encouraged to read through it and see if there's emotional words like this, because
mm-hmm.
we're talking about a permitted document that permitted process.
Right, and that's some of the old language. Old could
yeah.
mean 15 years ago. Yeah.
It would make sense to instead of destruction.
I saw the same thing. I couldn't figure out what it was that was bothering me. But there's some language that comes across up through there that implies a judgment rather than the
practice.
That's a good point because,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we're putting together these ordinances, we should relate to kind of a dispassionate, if you will, kind of description of exactly what's going on rather than trying to be prejudicial in the way that we write the thing. I get it. I think that's right.
Another word, target. It is like target. I don't know what we have to target, but it's a reference to
target. Failure of a tree. Yeah, that's
it. No, I mean,
I don't know.
To be casualty would be better.
And does that show up? You know, the thing to do. We could search, see if target shows up. You know.
try to find a similar target.
Yeah, yeah.
If it only shows up there, it only shows up there. So is it necessary?
Yeah. But if you find, you know, if you do find edits like that that you think are either confusing or
just not necessary,
emotional or not necessary, you know, we can take those one-on-one. Just, you know, give us an email and we'll try to clean it up. You guys are really good proofreaders for us. And, you know, we do get into some of these concepts and we don't read it for layman kind of things that jump out because you're trying to get all the technical stuff in it.
Yeah. Funny.
But those are good comments.
Yeah.
Good comments.
And I think my overarching comment is that it just seems to be threaded through the document.
Mm-hmm.
Words. And it has a place, but not in a document.
Right.
Yeah, I'll try to give it a...
Yeah, there's not a lot of the old stuff left.
We've, a read to catch those. And if any of you catch them, just send me a quick email. Or Jamie and we'll try to clean them up.
Yeah. I think it's more of a 10,000 question that came to mind as I was reading through your notes, actually, from the comments that you talked to Vancouver and others. The idea of canopy, and I think that you may have, in commenting about forestry and the urban forestry idea, pinpointed it. Would a canopy goal be related to an urban forestry? Because I started thinking about whether, as we're switching everything around and talking about using tree credits, our real goal is tree coverage in the city, right? So why aren't we framing it? That struck me. It resonated, this idea of a canopy target or goal.
Yeah, I feel like in order to really have an educated canopy goal, which again, Jim could probably speak to this better, is that you'd really have to do an inventory of your whole city, figure out where you're at, you know, where you want to be, where those identified locations are. Dave probably has more experience with this, but yeah, and so that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure if we're quite there. I mean, we can, you know, for the LID plat, we had it per the site, we had a goal.
Right. And that kind of inventory is probably really out of scope for us. But I do think that if we were to think about it a little more in terms of urban forestry, that involves both preservation and very much so replanting. And there are a lot of things that come up with that. I mean, the arborists have told me, you know, have diversity of species because if you get a disease, you're going to lose the whole thing. So there are a lot of ideas that... really are kind of the ingredients to successful urban forestry. And so, you know, I like Commissioner Ryan's comment with respect to health benefits, because if you're really looking at replanting, because we're going to grow as a city and we're going to lose some of our forests, and it's just inevitable. So how do you repopulate in a healthy way, in an attractive way, and create an urban forestry program where at the end of the day your streets are attractive, your parks are attractive, you have a lot of passive open space areas that you've left and those are attractive. So you don't lose all of the natural original planting, but you supplement it with other plantings that are more healthy and ornamental and do the kinds of things you want to do in a city.
Yeah, and the Deb from Kirkland did tell me about a great DNR has a program where you can apply to have this inventory done. You need a match. And so we had taken that to council a year or two ago. And you can get up to 15,000, I think she said. And it's a great resource. So we can try that again and, you know, go after this, you know, urban forestry program.
I had the fortune of being on an interview panel for a senior level position at the King County Lands Department this last couple of days. And there was a lengthy discussion about canopy and street trees and things. And we had an interviewee whose name is Nicholas Bratton. He works for Forterra. He's well studied in this work. It's a very significant store of research paper on trees versus accidents in the urban and suburban environments. And he's finding that the studies on this issue are very skewed against urban trees because the literature talks about fatalities of cars hitting trees, that the Fatalities are primarily in the rural area, where speed limits are a little higher, etc. But then the urban areas, the speed limits are quite low. There's no documentation of that. They just talk about trees and the accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of biased against the urban area. He's saying that that is unfortunate. His paper speaks about that, and he has methodologies that are correct for that. And so we should be thinking about limiting our trees along streetways in the urban area where speed limits are lower than they are on the open road. We need to be thinking about trees and how they might affect other structures like sidewalks, things of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a problem, but they aren't as much of a hazard to public health as the documentation suggests. And that we have to think about more street trees, more boulevard trees.
Yeah, and that was kind of a common theme that I saw. Our proposal is that we would give up to 50% credit, and we'll get to that, because when we were looking at the tree credits that we want to get for a 2-acre industrial site, I don't know if you saw my new example in there, you know, it'd be, if you had no trees, you'd have to plant 44, and we were thinking, that's a lot, you know. 2-acre site. And so I don't know why they're not giving it any credit for that.
I guess my curiosity is what their thought process is
for. Yeah. For not giving any credit for street trees or.
Because I was sort of thinking about sidewalks.
Right.
So they're not giving credit because those down the road create additional cost to the city.
It depends on the kind of tree you plant. There are a number of things that over the years, as I've worked with them as a public works director, that using root barriers and things at the upper levels direct the roots lower, and they don't have a chance to impact things that are at the surface as much. And there are certain kinds of trees that taproot deeper, and they don't spread as much. But I think that when you look at all of the uses of trees on a site, and I've been in the warmer climates where it was really important that you had a certain amount of shade cover just from the standpoint of urban heat and comfort of people in the area. So, you know, we concentrated heavily on trying to populate parking lots and the perimeters of those, whether it was long streets or entrances or whatever, with trees. So there are a lot of uses of them. When I hear trees talked about here, people are looking at the trees they want to preserve and the trees that are on the hills and the mountains. But there's a whole other thing that happens in an urban area, in urban forestry, and that's using trees for shade, using trees for ornamental reasons, using trees actually for speed control, because when you have a canopy in a street and you start using complete streets and you start putting, a green space of maybe 6 or 8 feet between the curb and the sidewalk, and you plant in there so that the street canopy is covered a bit, and you have bike lanes on the side, all of these things contribute towards slowing people down. It's just a mentality that happens when you do it. So there are a whole lot of things that you can design with trees for to meet a number of needs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I look at a landscape plan, I'm looking at what people do. I think there are opportunities on sites that normally wouldn't be that green.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it makes it a little more difficult for drainage, or it makes it a little more difficult for a parking lot sweeping or things like that. But in order to break up the parking areas, it really is effective. And to define the entrances to parking areas where people come in, there's a certain type of tree that will help guide you to where the entrance is because it's more majestic or it uses color or whatever. So there are a lot of uses that you can put the trees to that might be quite different than what you took out of the area, but they still can be, you know, really add value to the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, canopy, I think, cover is the cumulative effect of using those in various places, whether it's parking lots or boulevards or wherever you're using them, and combining that with the great number of parks we have here so that if you were to take an aerial view when they mature, you'd say, gee, They probably removed trees, but it still looks pretty good.
No. My membership on the DCD is exposed to things that as a professional forest director I'm aware of. But when we talk about settling in Seattle in the early 1900s, trees were a problem to the engineering and the development cities they were in. They were away. So there's a lot of tree deserts in the old town Seattle that the KCD is working with Seattle and trying to repopulate the trees. And there's clear evidence that there's a whole change in attitude in the population that live amongst trees and live around greenery. And so here we are in North Bend. If we look, if we take the past with Seattle and how they developed early, we can take a page from that and realize we need to start with trees, not end with trees. And make sure we maintain streets with trees and yards with trees. And allowing trees to be taken down because they're in the way, it's probably going to be a problem long term for us. We need to find ways to work around the trees.
I think at least with those that are, you know, either you can call them significant trees or heritage trees or whatever you want to call them, but I think those that have great, you know, aesthetic, health value, and value to the property, because certainly your property's worth a lot more if you have mature trees on it. I think that's really important.
Wasn't it Jim that said that a 30-inch tree is worth $30,000 in property value?
Yeah, he showed a picture of one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to read you the little snippet from Duval, just to see what you guys think of it? So they have a new section, and like I said, they're about ready to adopt, or might have just adopted, protection of exceptional trees. And this is where I was saying we could add to this section. I can email this around to you. But the following regulations shall apply to protection and limited allowances for removal of exceptional trees, whether occurring as part of a development proposal or not. Removal of exceptional trees shall not be allowed except under the following circumstances: when they're hazard, dead or dying, or an emergency situation, where they're necessary for public roads and bridges within existing public rights of way and other essential public facilities. The third, when necessary for access to private development sites, provided there are no feasible alternative alignments. Alternative access shall be pursued to the maximum extent feasible. So if they're in the way of accessing a site. And then four is for all other proposed impacts to exceptional trees where proposed, it is presumed that an alternative development proposal exists. Activities and uses shall be prohibited unless the applicant can demonstrate that all on-site alternative designs that would avoid or result in less impacts to exceptional trees, such as reduction in the size, scope, configuration, or density of the project, are not feasible. So I thought that was interesting. It brought up those scenarios. And then, so those would be the four exceptions. And then where there are unavoidable impacts allowed, they would replace the trees. And at a 3-to-1, so it's a little bit higher threshold. So that's where Duval landed on the issue of exceptional trees. And I liked that. I thought it was clear. But I wanted to see what your direction would be. They defined it very similar. They had a few more species, so it was the table of, and they did have, like I said, a couple extra species that we hadn't added, but really similar, exact same sizes.
So is there, as far as the right of way, we had that discussion, right of way will not count towards the total.
There is, I just need to find it. Maybe I'll find it quicker here. It falls under here. So it is under 094A. Find the page for you. 094. Page 20. This is again for your supplemental tree locations, and F was highlighted. And that's where I highlighted it so we could discuss it and see, you know, where we landed on it.
Is that what you mean there by as street tree? As I thought you meant as a new street tree. But so you're saying, because the conversation we just had a little bit ago, I don't know, is in here as far as counting.
Counting existing?
Yeah, counting. Is that what you were talking about?
Well, I was commenting on the fact that some of them do not allow trees.
To count.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You said that there was credit.
But you were meaning new. You were meaning new trees that they're installing as part of their development.
Right.
And no, if there was an existing, especially street tree in a right-of-way, would not count for private development. This is saying for the ones you're required to replace, we are giving a credit. And we didn't see that other cities were doing that as much.
I think it would probably have to depend on different ownerships right of ways.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what is that land? What are their practices?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Because certain entities may just decide to cut something down and that's fine
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
them because they're the owner. So
mm-hmm.
how would we be able to protect that in the right of way if the city don't bend their
So we would. So if a plat gets developed and they are putting in a bunch of street trees throughout all of their streets, then they dedicate it to the city, and that becomes ours. Same thing along their frontage, and they dedicate that, and it becomes ours. So they are getting we would allow a portion of their tree density credit or their perimeter landscape to count.
You know, there are some circumstances, and I don't know if it's the rule or the exception,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you do certain public improvements within an easement area, and the street trees would likely be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some communities, they actually have an urban forestry program where they're taken care of by the jurisdiction, but most of them, particularly these days when municipal finances aren't as good as they should be, they make it the responsibility of the property owner. Many, many cities do.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is there's always a lot of controversy surrounding sidewalks when they're destroyed by trees.
Mm-hmm.
Whose responsibility is it to get rid of trip hazards? Most codes are written so that it's the responsibility of the property owner. Is that what happens in reality? About 50-50. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. If you inventory your community and you find that you have trip hazards and people won't deal with them, then quite often cities will go in and replace those sections of street where they have severe trip hazards. Other things I've seen done is forming LIDs, and the city contributes toward the LID. So it's a partnership of paying for it. But you only do that where you have a huge area of an older subdivision where you have older trees that is really just torn up the sidewalks. And you have to totally replace. And that becomes really a big problem, too, because you have to root prune when you do that, because you can't rebuild the sidewalk except at a certain grade. So you're ending up getting into that zone that you don't want to get into because you have to. There are other cities that will actually remove the trees and replant them. And it really removes quite an amenity to the area, but they think in pruning them, they're going to kill them anyway. So that's why when you're doing street trees, either you have to have a large planter strip if you move the sidewalk back and you have the curb, or you do a curb sidewalk and plant the street trees behind them so that you're away from far enough away from the sidewalk.
Real world, I live on Tanner Road, and I know when that project is finished, they're going to widen the road and make it through. I'm going to lose a lot of trees because the running surface, that road's only 30 feet wide. I know right away 66 feet wide. And I've got a whole row of trees that's going to be taken out because I've been, whatever, over the years, that has been allowed to occur.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying is interesting, that the landlord would be responsible actually to maintain, there's a sidewalk there, and maintain the sidewalk. Because
that's typical in most codes. It's typical in most codes. And I don't know what the genesis of that is, but you know how people write codes. They say, what does yours look like to me?
Well, I wouldn't have put in that sidewalk, so I would have thought that the owns that right of way, they would take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not right, responsible for a bump and sidewalk.
Well, that's the way the codes are written, and I think part of it, I think, has to do with being financially able to take care of it. Certainly, when we look at the alleys in this community and we look at the older streets, they're in terrible disrepair, and there isn't funding to take care of
it. If I wanted to remove that sidewalk, I would have stopped dead in my tracks. I mean, I would have to be responsible for it. I'll just take it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're responsible for repairs. I'm not saying responsible for the sidewalk.
If you want to not have the repairs.
I have responsibility to it. I'll be taking it out. And I defy the city to stop me. If I have to repair it, I decide not to have it.
Well, that's neither here nor there. That's what it is.
Rob?
But that, I mean, that's a lot, of people aren't aware of those things. But if you work with them in multiple cities, and I have, that's pretty standard.
Really?
Yes. And so there's always a big debate over that. And I know in the city of Palo Alto, they had a tremendous street tree program. And they had a lot of older trees that were very nice street trees. And they were buckling sidewalks all over the place. So they got together with the public and they said, how about we form an assessment district, which is an LID. And the city went 50-50 with them. So the city paid for half of it. Right. And the residents, through an LID, of course, they can pay it off over time, and it wasn't a big hit at once. And they agreed to do that. And so they got new sidewalks throughout several blocks. And it was a very major project.
That might be our conundrum because, you know, right now in our code, we have back a sidewalk is the right-of-way, and that's dedicated to the city typically. If we have an LID swale, then that's owned and maintained by homeowners a lot. Mm-hmm. So you're butting up the two, and then if the tree barrier, root barrier wasn't installed right, then
that underscores in our discussion, though, is making sure you have the right kinds of trees, mm-hmm. the right kinds of standards, and it costs mm-hmm. a little more to put a root barrier in there, but that takes care of, those are basically usually concrete or some kind of material similar to that will allow enough root growth within it, so they're usually pretty big. And you pop them down, they're usually about 3 or 4 feet deep, and they direct the roots down so that they won't hit the street and they won't hit the sidewalk. And there are any number of things you have to watch out for. You cannot be near sewer lines or a number of things that you have to avoid.
For the sidewalks, no, that'd be street standards. And the rules for, we have an approved street tree list, and we say if it's this width or less of a planter strip, a root barrier, is a root barrier required, yes or no? So that's pretty good in our code. It's the other landscaping regulations that we'll get to that just need, and the soil prep and things like that just need a little refresher.
Where would something like removal of ivy or other weeds mm-hmm. That are on site with a new development, where would that be in this document?
That also shows up in the landscaping code to say that you should remove all invasives and replant with per our landscaping. I'm not sure if anything shows up in here. Yeah. Because again, this is the clearing section, so yeah, nothing specific to that landscaping code. And then it's also discussed in the critical area regulations too, to help improve a site. Yeah, and you want me to keep kind of walking through? You guys butt in when you like. Page 7, we talked about, at the bottom, we talked about tree topping, making sure that was clearly defined, that was something that wasn't pruning, and if that's done, then in some cases you're going to have to pay a fine, and you're going to need to replace. We already talked about tree unit credits. Page 9, this was provided by Jim, the homestead tree, which we talked about.
Could we stick with the tree topping for a minute?
Yeah.
You should be pretty interested in this, Scott, because utility companies will quite often come through where they have mm-hmm. lines that are really in conflict with the tree, and you can get some pretty strange trimming that occurs there, but mm-hmm. there's a utilitarian reason for it.
Right.
Do we deal with that at all? Is there any...
Right. They're exempt too.
It may. It yes. may. But I'm wondering how we...
Utility management, we right here.
Cross-reference and coordinate or not.
Right. Utility management is a categorical exemption.
Okay.
Interruption of services provided by utility. So, yeah. Hopefully they do a good job of pruning when they can. Sometimes it's just ugly.
Well, sometimes I don't. It's yeah. Tanner Electric. Has just cut these out.
Right.
Below the line. So that's another way to do it.
Right. Yeah, right.
You're talking about there's a strip of pine trees right along the road or along the mm-hmm. east bank.
Mm-hmm.
They trim below and trim above. they just take the damage.
Yeah, and if they yeah, and they
the
and if they came in and talked to us about that, they could replant somewhere else, you know, and
mm-hmm.
follow the code, and that would be good, too. So.
Well, in most cases, the subdivisions are undergrounding the utilities, mm-hmm. but there are existing conditions where
mm-hmm.
you have overhead lines. And the other thing is, if you have high-tension lines, it's very likely it's too expensive to underground them. We're going to be bringing an issue to you soon that has come to us from Tanner Electric, where they are in need of putting a major high-tension line through the community right along the Snoqualmie Valley Trail, and an alternative location is along North Bend Way.
Yeah.
And part of what we've said to them in bringing that application to us is that they're going to have to go through SEPA, because certainly if people are going to gripe about a two- or three-story apartment building that occupies a portion of a block, they're certainly going to gripe about a high-tension power line at 50 or 60 feet that's going to go 2 miles along the trail. So what we've asked them to do is to take the lead in all of the public outreach and talk about what alternatives they've looked at, talk about why it's needed in the community and why it's necessary and why it can't go underground, because the high-tension lines can't. And explain to the community what it means. And since Tanner is supported by this community largely as people who buy power from them, if you were to underground it, they'd have to amortize that cost over the community, and they should be telling the community what that kind of implication is to people's pocketbooks. They have to tell the whole story so that people react from a full, educated point of view of what's involved. So we're asking them to take the lead and say, look, we're not going to be your foil. You go out to the community and you tell them what's needed and why it's needed and what the alternatives are and why this is the best one. So you're going to be saying that too, because that will be, you'll have public meetings where people are invited to comment on it. And it's good that you as a commission and the council be informed that this is what's being proposed. So if all of you, it might be a good idea for us to take a copy of a description of what that mm-hmm. proposal is and get it to each one of you.
Yeah,
so
we'll
that
let
when
you know
people
when
start
meetings,
asking about it, you've got the skinny and you know.
What are the closest examples of one existing high tension line?
Beg your pardon?
What are examples of an existing tension line like that that's in the community?
You'll find that it's kind of hard. You'll see when we give
you
the.
We have pictures on them.
Yeah, they've got photographs.
They're not the mega big ones with all the guy wires and
they're actually on. They're actually on wood poles.
Yeah.
But they're usually today when we have a new development or an energy project proposed, we underground the utilities, and it isn't cheap. And it's one of the major costs that people have when they develop, and they do fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a part of a city project or a public agency project, you can get some relief on the cost because the utility company helps pay for it. If it's a private development, they pay for it 100%. And the cost per lineal foot is pretty high. And I've had some people really grouse about those kinds of improvements, but it makes a huge difference in the community aesthetically, particularly when you have the views you have here. And the other thing it does is, from the standpoint of the outages that we get from storms, it reduces a lot of that. But the high tension wires, you cannot do that way.
So where would the line go?
We'll send you an exhibit from the PSE Thrasher substation down the trail, crossing North Bend Way, and they're going to have a new substation just on the other side. You know, the trail comes in at kind of a weird angle.
Yeah.
Just beyond that, they're putting in a substation in the future. So, yep, so more to come.
Yep.
So just keep plugging through. We added a homestead tree definition or description under exceptional.
Yeah.
We talked about.
Page 9.
On page 10, I had a couple species I thought we could add to the exceptional tree species.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's captured most of the native conifers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A little more unusual, but can you find around here, is grand fir?
Yes, that was one that Duval had that we didn't, okay. That we could add.
I would say definitely grand fir and then white pine. You may or may not find it, but I think it's good to have on the list.
They had a shore pine.
Pine. Grand fir, white pine, or shore pine.
See the white pine on there.
I'm not sure on the PBH.
I can check with Jim on the white pine. I don't see that one on here.
I don't know how many giant sequoias we have, but I guess we just keep it anyway.
Right. Okay.
Would you throw the yellow cedar?
You could, but those are all planted. Yeah, those are more wetter. We could. I don't know if any exist.
They were planted a while ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen them.
And that could count as a homestead tree then, by that description?
I mean, there's something wrong with adding it. I think that list is...
I see a sequoia downtown Bellevue on 8th Street.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never cut that tree down.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Good. Anything else as we chug along? The next highlight's on 13, but that's not a goal-related one that we just wanted to clarify. Getting a little bit in. Oh, yep.
Well, just to go back to this topic of canopy cover,
mm-hmm.
I guess I'm still trying to kind of grasp the idea of these tree units and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess my question was, it seems like in our city, so this is a good question, this is one of the cities that I use the question, where we have a whole lot of development, that focusing on canopy right now seems a little bit preemptive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, help me understand, if the goal of focusing on units now will be shooting for, at maturity, a certain theory behind it?
I think you always, to have a healthy forest, you're going to have a succession of trees, you know, and that's what we're trying to get at with counting these smaller ones too. So I think that's part of your...
That I heard in the last meeting was focusing on, you know, not necessarily these larger trees like we were just talking about,
right.
But if there's a cluster,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, that are close together, and because you don't know how many you're going to survive to maturity, and so...
Mm-hmm.
Over time, like those, the benefit of using the tree units is instead of having 2 30-inch trees left on the site, you're going to have more,
mm-hmm.
a variety,
mm-hmm.
closer together. But at that point, the canopy is going to be significantly reduced. However, in 15, 20 years, when
mm-hmm.
this age of maturity,
mm-hmm.
now we have probably a larger than 40% canopy,
mm-hmm.
which would be even more ideal
mm-hmm.
in a mature place. So I guess, where am I going with this? We're starting to talk about canopy, or we're starting to talk about tree units, and it seems hard to talk about both of those at the same time.
Yes.
And so I guess I'm wondering where are we going? Is it,
right.
I feel like canopy started to get mentioned in here, or referred to. sorry, what at one point, but now we're talking about units, so maybe I can ask Jim.
All right. The, let's look and see where our canopy shows up. The purpose, maintain and enhance the canopy, you know, again, we don't have, we don't have specific minimum standards that were,
Does it mean that everything within the city limits, like kind of a raindrop, like the tree canopy? I'm just not sure, because we're not talking about individual development.
This would be, what we're talking about is more on the individual level, because we don't have a standard throughout the city that we're trying, a minimum that we're trying to maintain. Yeah, here's the tree canopy. This is per site. In order to ensure that existing tree canopy is appropriately retained as new development occurs, 50% of the tree density credits must be achieved through retention of those trees. Retaining those trees, you know, is a factor of tree canopy. It's,
it looks to me like you're saying, if you look at an existing tree canopy, mm-hmm. and you know you're going to modify it, it's the tree credit process that's mm-hmm. supposed to bring you back to the canopy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way I'm reading
yeah.
this.
Okay.
That if you're using the tree credit process appropriately, you should, it should result ultimately when those trees mm-hmm. are replaced in a canopy that gets to the density you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way I'm seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so that alludes to, like, we'll get there,
mm-hmm.
but, like, what kind of time frame? And I guess that this could be, in my mind, conflicting and not doing what we wanted to do. What you're saying made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have to meet a 50% canopy...
They have to maintain 50% of what they're getting for their tree unit credits. Has to be from their existing.
Okay. So am I not thinking about this right? I mean, I'm open to feedback, asking for it. Is this going to undermine, like, what we're really shooting for with the tree credits? I mean, if they're getting their credits for the canopy, I'm confusing myself, through density, or through canopy. I guess what I'm concerned with is it's going to be the same thing. That we're just going to have a couple big trees left on the site, which aren't going to be viable mm-hmm. for the long term and mm-hmm. aren't really going to get at what we're shooting for, which is, healthier forest.
Right. Well, we're almost to the section on 16 where we did some scenarios, and we said, you know, and like when I talked to Kirkland, they said, well, an average lot of 7,000 square feet. So if you calculate out the tree density credits, there's going to be trees that need to be planted on every development site. And for the 8,000 square foot lot, you would need those 8 tree credits. You could get them in a variety of ways, but you're only getting the benefit of those larger trees so much. And you're required to retain what's on site, too, a balance of that. So,
I think they're trying to reach a point where a canopy for a given square footage is the result of what you have to do under the ordinance. And you may be right that if you save a couple of existing trees and they give you enough credit, that you're going to meet the goal for that square footage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you couldn't retain them and you planted a greater number of trees, you might in the future exceed it as they mature,
mm-hmm.
because you'd have a greater number of trees. Mm-hmm. So they're allowing different ways to end up with that canopy. Mm-hmm. And you're right in saying, well, wouldn't you end up with something that's a little less impressive than what you originally had? Of course you are, because some of that site's going to be covered by impervious surface, because that's what happens. And how you achieve it is either by retaining the trees, preferably exceptional trees, or if the trees come out that aren't exceptional, you're going to have to replace them with the proper species, proper size, and maintain them over time so that you reach the goal in that way, rather than just retaining the two trees.
So that's how you're reading this.
That's how I see
mm-hmm.
it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I see it, because they're saying if you take a typical 8,000 square foot lot, here's how you can end up with the required canopy. There are two ways of doing it. You can either take the two significant trees that are there and provide you a canopy that reaches that coverage, or if the trees are taken out, you have a requirement of planting a certain number of trees that will result in that kind of a canopy. So that's the way I see you reaching it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really approaching it from kind of a different standpoint than we have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very
much. Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at that one too. I liked the retention of existing trees.
Right, and that is the priority as you go through the code.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do within the code, and this is this tough walk we have to do, is that if you're going to improve a site, the smaller the site is, the harder it is to do that. And remember, you as a planning commissioner are also looking at the standards that we have for lot area coverage, setbacks, all the typical things you look at in a development that occurs. And if you're allowing, what do we allow?
Mm-hmm.
40% 50% coverage?
35 to 40 on
okay,
a single
35
family.
35 to 40% coverage. So take a site. I mean, just typically, if you bought a lot and you wanted to put a house on it and you wanted to reach maximum coverage, you're going to take out 45% of that site. Plus, you're going to have to accomplish the grading that it takes to, you know, to make a drain properly. And you're going to have to put a driveway in, right? And if when you get done with that, very likely, unless those trees are located in positions where you're not going to interrupt them with that improvement, you can retain them. But that quite often isn't the case, and I think Rob could tell us it isn't. And so we need to have another reasonable method to achieve the canopy cover that we want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the way to deal with the reality of the other standards that you're dealing with when you develop your property. But it is putting a lot of emphasis on populating the site with trees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's, you know, the quantity varies, but that's kind of how it looks in the development, is new trees. So I think that where we can be different is by retaining existing trees.
Yeah.
I don't know how many we have left, honestly. There's not a whole lot of wooded sites left, but there are some.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a reason to attempt to save some of those, especially if it's a dark forest. 500 years. You know?
Well, when you do this, I think the thing that's really important to think of, and you know, Rob, you can jump in here because you're doing the development. When we look at a plat, we look at it in its raw condition when they bring in a subdivision. We don't look at it, we look at what's out there, and we do have inventory of trees done. If we run into trees like that, we try to do what we can to avoid taking them out, whether it changes the design of the subdivision, whether it changes the design of the street system, all of those things, and try to then look at, okay, if you're going to plant this thing and you've identified where these significant trees are, you got to work around these guys to the greatest
extent. This code is definitely strengthening that over what we have now.
Right.
Yeah.
I think
can I draw a lot for you?
Yeah. Sure. You can draw a little or a lot.
And I'm not a straight line guy very well, right? That's my lot, right, Jamie? And I got another one over here. I got another one over there. And I've got a lot pad that looks something like that, right? Under our current code, got roughly 5 feet, and once my balance is
10,
right? Or what almost all developers do is split the difference. So 7 feet on the side. I got 15 feet minimum from the street. Here's my travel lane.
20 now?
20. Okay, let's take away some more. All of you that wanted that larger house, they just went away.
25.
And 25 in the back, right? Let's say that's that 8,000 square foot lot that Jamie did the example of, which resulted in 8 trees?
8 tree credits.
8 tree, well, translates into trees, right? So
you could have one larger tree.
What was your example? You had 4 trees of at least...
So this one had, if you had 2 existing trees in the 12 to 24 inch range,
okay,
and less if one of them's a conifer, so you could have 2, or by a combination of planting on the lot or within other areas of the development.
So my math's not that good. Dick, 24 inch tree, what's my canopy? 45 feet. Can you find that for me here? Cut it in half. Can you give me a 25 foot setback that I can have that tree in? So here's what I'm sharing with you. I can't retain a tree here.
Mm-mm.
I can't retain a tree here. I guarantee you I can't retain a tree out here unless it is a very uniquely placed tree that we work with the city to put it sidewalk on curb to move around the tree or something, which we've done in, you know, very limited.
But you quite often will have 1 street tree in the front. That's pretty typical.
Oh, mm-hmm. 2. There'll be 2 of them,
yeah.
Generally, right? Yeah. That's new planting. I'm mm-hmm. talking about trying, you know, this is written as preservation. You're mm-hmm. saying keep mm-hmm. the tree that's there. The only area that I have that hope for is the backyard, and usually the closer to the property line is the better end, and the only place I can possibly save it because of that zone.
Right.
Of the canopy, right?
Yeah.
4 of those?
I mean, it's
a real tough
20-acre site. This is within.
Well, so Scott, that goes to the next point. So this is the 8,000 square foot lot. If I've got a 20-acre site, you know, do the math. It still is getting divided up into, first to take out all the roadways that are required and median and all the different things. This much land left over to break into lots. You're going to take away lots. Mm-hmm. That's the only way that I see you accomplishing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to lose lots. So it works against all the other pieces of the code to give you a value.
Yeah, and one of the problems that we're having now, I mean, if you put housing price in the mix, we've got a problem because nobody's building one-story houses because you can't get enough return from it, so they build two-story. Everybody would love a one-story house, but we're not getting them. Then when you take a look at the requirements for tree preservation and the density that you have to get to be able to have a house that you can buy, because the larger the lot, the more the cost, right? So if you're going to come in here and you're going to double it and put a 16,000 square foot lot, you're probably going to have a $1.2 million house on it. Or more.
You're already hitting
the right. And so that's kind of we look at it from the standpoint we really want to preserve trees and we want to write top ordinances to do it. But the fact of the matter is, this is the kind of thing that we're looking at. This is a holistic thing. When you're doing a development or you're considering these things, you consider everything. You don't just consider trees. So, you know, it's one thing to advocate for it, and we all want to, but it's another thing to say, what am I dealing with in the real world? What are we getting here? What is our experience? And I know a lot of people in the community aren't happy with this. They aren't happy with the change from the older style lots that people could afford that are much larger. You've heard it. You've heard people come in here and talk to us about, well, I don't want those cottages near me, and I want 35 to 40 feet before they're going to screw my property up because our properties out here are an acre, a quarter acre, a third acre. And you're just not finding those because people can't afford them. So when we put regulations together, it's really a stretch for us to try to reach where people articulate where they want to go. And it's very similar, Mr. Mayor, it's very similar to the argument we had about uses. Well, we don't want those uses, they're ugly. Mm-hmm. But we need those uses.
Mm-hmm.
So the job of the Planning Commission is a lot harder than it appears. I mean, you really are trying to deal with this housing people. You're trying to deal with building community. And you're also trying to do these things that are really laudable and that you want to do. But how do we do it in today's world when people are paying $750 to $1 million for a house on a lot that I scratch my head and say, how's that happening? I bought a house here probably 4 months ago, and it's gone up nearly $60,000, and I can't believe it. And this bubble's going to burst sometime, and I would predict within the next 18 months to 2 years something's going to happen. Because we just can't do it. Wages can't keep up with this. But you're not going to see the big lots come back.
Our new design standards for the lot variation, it differed, I think, council changed it, I think, from your recommendation a little bit. But where it landed was we have the 7,500 minimum, and then we have variation requirements of 33% or 2,000 square feet more than that, so 9,500. And then 33% are 2,000 more than that, so 11,500. They wanted to see that variety in size of lots. That would give the larger ones would give you more opportunity for some of the trees if they are at the backs.
So can we keep Duval putting this 50% required through retention system?
I don't. Yeah, I don't. It might take me a second to look. I'll look through that and see. Yeah.
What was it before?
If we give credit for.
Well, did we have something in our code before as far as retaining?
Percent retention?
Yeah.
Percent retention in our code now is 30%. Of just significant trees, so just the larger ones. The ones that were falling just under that threshold were not even counted. So the developer wasn't getting credit for that, and they, it was not, the city wasn't.
And so this
seeing
is
that.
Saying this is existing trees, so any tree on site.
Yeah, the tree unit credits are derived from that viable tree, 4 inches. Yeah, yeah.
Was that absent for retention?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
what we've had.
Yeah. We're losing our talent.
Right. Yeah, so what we've done is we have been giving credit. We've had plat conditions which have that critical root zone protection. We've been doing a lot of this through, which I talked about at the last meeting, but through the plat approvals where we've said if you have trees that are smaller but viable, you can get a 2-to-1 credit. We're working with, like, the quadrant development. Instead of paying an in-lieu amount, writing a check out, the council really wanted us to get them to replant on site, and they're going to. And they're going to be 4-foot, you know, pines or firs or whatever they are, and they'll grow up over time. So we're working.
And that happened
that's
in
been,
Side View. I remember Side View.
Mm-hmm.
A tree desert. Now I look at it.
Yeah.
A lot of trees that were planted.
Yeah.
That are viable. It's very cute.
Yeah. You know, and even looking, when I talked to Kirkland, and they said, yeah, it's, there's quite a few trees that have to be replanted on the lots, you know, and that's Kirkland. 6 to 7 for trees have to be planted for an average 7,000 square foot lot.
Finding the spot.
Yeah.
And then finding where I can get my sunshine. I'm a homeowner now.
Well, that can be a Japanese maple. I mean, it's, you know, or it can be a smaller dwarf species. So what we did on page 16, or wait, let me, no, I went too far ahead. A couple of the changes when I was talking on page 14 on the required minimum tree credits, I talked with Lynn and Mike about this, and we took parks out because parks is kind of a weird one. We had a high standard for it. In reality, is that going to happen if it's a ball field?
What is the intensity?
The intensity of the land use. So,
intensity of land use means it's kind of like density to residential, but intensity relates to not only residential but all land uses. So, a lot of what people will use in the planning professionals, they will do what's called a transect, and you'll be out in the farmland, and then you move into the larger lots that are on the perimeter of cities. Then you have, you know, regular single family, and then it might go to more townhouse, then apartment, and then you get near a downtown, you get commercial, and then you might even go to high-rise. But the transect is heightened bulk of buildings and the density of buildings, so the intensity of use increases in the urban core.
Okay.
That's what it means.
The other proposal we thought was for that lot that's 7,500 or less, that we could reduce the tree credit required in half. Because it does seem like a lot. And when you're thinking of lots, maybe downtown. The other change was in downtown, reducing that compared to other commercial uses that you're going to see throughout the town. So. Lots are smaller, and you're in that more intense setting, the high intensity setting, where we still, I think, want to have trees, and they're beneficial. But you're going to have the build out. You're not going to have the setback requirements.
That's a large part of the reason why street trees become so important.
Yeah.
Because of the arguments that Rob is giving now. I think that you can repopulate the site with ornamental trees. I mean, we're not just talking, you know, you've got to have the big pines in your yard. So there's some other things you can do, I think, to meet the intent. But regardless, it's still difficult.
Yeah.
Because people want to have recreation or barbecue areas or whatever they might do in their backyard. They might want to grow food. There are all kinds of things that enter into the equation. So, you know, when you write these, I think it's great to try to angle it from the standpoint of tree preservation, but it's also wise to be realistic, because what we're going to get is we're going to get a lot of exceptions, variances, and all that sort of thing. And you just ought to write a code that it can be implemented and work. So it's a challenge for all of us. It's a challenge for you. It's a challenge for us.
We're getting to 9 o'clock. It's the last kind of major area, which we've already touched on, of changes. That and the bonding we could touch on. And if you guys don't have anything else, I think we're probably getting sleepy for the night. So page 16, where it talks about the tree density credits, that's where we had some examples that hopefully help to kind of picture. And really, it's, if there's no trees on a site, that's where the burden is going to be, to try to get some of that. If there's at least something to work with, I think it can go a long ways.
And one of the other possibilities, I know your company has done this, if you have an open space area or an entry where you have open space, or mini park or something that's relieving the kind of closeness that you feel with some of these setbacks in the homes and the coverage, you can use that space for replanting too. Mm-hmm. And you guys have done a pretty good job of that.
Yep.
Yeah, and that then you start saying, how do we frame an entrance? How do we make the entrance to our subdivision look good? Mm-hmm. If we have an ability to do some perimeter treatment, if we have some riparian or creek areas, or even if we have some drainage areas that we are going to, you know, keep out of development because they're needed for that purpose, you can populate the area around them and the trails that go around them with trees. So there are other, it isn't all on site, but it's very difficult to meet it if you don't have those things. So one of the things we're forcing Rob and his colleagues to do is to provide for some open space in the subdivisions, which also adds to the value of the home. But it does lower the total yield of the property, and it is reflected in the price of the place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On page 16, there's number 3 down there that says the director may allow for removal of trees beyond the retention standards when the applicant demonstrates that the proposed activity requiring additional removal of existing trees is the only reasonable alternative that will accomplish the applicant's objective.
Mm-hmm.
So if that means just putting in more lots, is that the objective? Is that allowed to take out more trees?
And it says, and only when supplemental trees are provided to meet the tree density requirements.
Well, then that contradicts, though, the intention of existing trees. So it just depends, you know, is it a priority or isn't it, you know, to retain existing trees?
Yeah, you could say, okay, let's turn that around. Is it a priority to offer housing that is affordable to people in the upper income strategies, or you know, I'm not talking about the 1% or the 2% that can buy the $2 million home, but we're trying to provide housing opportunities that hit different income levels to the greatest degree we can. One of the things we ran into recently, and I was amazed at this, we do not allow zero lot line single families. So if you want to build a townhouse project here, you'd have to do a development agreement. So there are some types of entry-level housing where you could get ownership and you could get into the market, but where you have a chance to cluster and leave open space areas and leave significant trees, and we don't even have a zoning category for it, let alone allowing for the density. So I guess I hear what you're saying, and we need to make that a priority, and maybe what we would do if somebody came in with a plat and they're saying, well, it doesn't meet our objectives because we can't get the yield out of this. I suppose one of our reactions would be if the tree was significant enough, well, how about a mini park? How about doing something different? How about losing a lot?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it might be, that you, the developer would have to rethink what they
yeah.
can do in North Bend.
Yeah. And if the priority is through the ordinance and through the guidance we get from the ordinance, that they've got to come up with some objectives that include ours as well, then I think, and you know what the flavor of that is, I know how you guys are going to react to it, and I know how the council's going to react to it, then I'm going to go back to a guy like Rob, and I'm going to say, Rob, you're going to have to save that tree. Redesign your subdivision and tell me how you're going to do it.
And what I've seen from the code, it allows flexibility, which is good,
mm-hmm.
but it should be tiered as this is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the third step.
And that's why we want to get to this business of a significant tree or a heritage tree or something that really is kind of mm-hmm. you're gonna kind of hold the line on those. And that's when I would say, can you redesign the subdivision, because this is something we think it needs to stay. If you got to lose a lot or two, you got to lose a lot or two. If there's something else we can do to recapture the density in a different area or do something else, if there's a creative way that we can meet your financial objectives, let's look at it. You're the businessman. Tell me how you're going to do it. You've got the good designers working for you. We want to save this tree.
Sure.
And we have those battles, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah. I see what you're, I mean, I do see what you're saying about this these sentences here, and we can give that some thought. Make sure
yeah, if you can think of something that would maybe put a little more teeth in this
yeah.
and express
we'll
it,
too.
Express it with more of a priority, maybe balancing mm-hmm. the objectives of the developer with the objectives
mm-hmm.
of the ordinance.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we're doing this.
Yeah.
Okay. So if something really galls you here and you think it needs to be changed, then you need to kind of ponder it, come up with some wording, and get it to us. Okay? Because we see where you're coming from. But I like the fact that when we look at things like this, we're actually looking at the layout of today's product and what we're faced with in terms of the economy, in terms of affordable housing. I mean, there's just a lot to feed into this when you're talking about these standards.
Jamie, just to be totally clear, on that table 1910-2,
mm-hmm.
planted 8 foot, is it 8 foot?
Inches
off. 8 foot conifer,
yes.
2 inch caliber deciduous.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So is that like a 15 gallon? Or?
Yeah, and we describe it, the minimum size. Jim talked about this at the last meeting because he said that tree, the cost of this is about, when we were talking about bonding too, was about $500 to $1,000.
Okay.
So that's, it's an 8 foot tree. It's not,
okay.
It's significant.
That's
yeah.
Well, it's past 9 o'clock. Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you may go back and take a look at this and think of the discussion and come up with some ideas. We're very open
mm-hmm.
to giving us feedback once, you know, the light bulb goes on. You say, hey, I get this, and I really
yeah.
would put this in the mix.
Part of me thinks, kind of based on the public input so far, that there's we're going to have a lot of feedback. There's the potential for that.
Yeah.
feedback from other interested parties.
Yeah. Right. And we don't have to, you know, jam it. We're just trying to cover ground. We came to you earlier with this huge list of legislative items to deal with, and we're really getting through a lot of them, and we kind of got wrapped around the axle on the land use thing because it's so complex, but we're at least getting the material in front of you and getting the discussion going. And if ever the commission feels as a majority that they really haven't had the opportunity to review this thoroughly, or they would like to have more public discussion on it, then you need to tell us, and then tell us who you think the constituent folks are that we ought to invite to that. Because I think we need to target our public outreach more than we have. I mean, we're doing what's required by law, but, you know, people, they either don't read it in the paper or don't know what it is, or the public noticing quite often, even though it meets the law, people don't know what's going on with it, and they don't pay a lot of attention to it. It's like the flyer you receive from the city that you throw out, you don't look at it. So that's why we've hired a full-time communications officer. And Jill is even going on Facebook, and when people are coming up with comments that are either inaccurate or don't represent the action of the city, she's going online and saying, no, this is what's going on. You can communicate with me at any time. Here's what you've said that isn't quite accurate. One example is the poultry company that was coming into town. And over a month ago, they folded their tent and left, and people were still griping about it. And so we had to tell them what was really going on. And when people were saying it was a slaughterhouse, no, it wasn't a slaughterhouse. That isn't the case. And we pointed them to their website, to their current facility in Seattle, and if you look at the Yelp comments on it, they are almost to 5-0, so somebody likes them. And so they add value to somebody, and, you know, Jill is really helping us in that regard by getting back to people and saying, no, that's not so, this is what's going on. There is, and she's doing it, and I've seen some of our council members doing that recently, too, and it's good stuff. You know, that's really interacting with the public.
I have a question, I'm not sure where it relates to, but it, it's a specific section, but when a tree is planted off-site, native growth protection area or north end property, where are those, where have those been?
Yeah, so they go into a tree fund, and then we planted some at Torgerson Park. They're usually planted in park or public spaces.
We're also working with the group that I met with today that you usually meet with, the watershed folks, and they are concerned with, the health of fish species and upstream. You can affect that by the temperature of the water and all kinds of things. And they use funding to replant riparian areas. And so we could team up with people like that, and where you have open space areas that have been purchased by a public agency that are along the river, those folks are experts in the kinds of plant material that are native and should be there. Mm-hmm. And we partner with them to do things like that as well. So, you know, we do have a lot of open space in the community and a lot of passive open space, and rather than leaving it barren, and being, if it's appropriate for planting, we try to team up with people who do that as a total profession. That's what they're dedicated to doing. So
yeah, and we've also replaced street trees with that. And what we talked about at the last meeting was right now we have an administrative rule for that fee in lieu. Council said they really want to have that as a last resort. Number one, and then number two, we're going to adopt a revised rate in our taxes, rates, and fee schedule that would go along with this. And what we've heard is anywhere between $500 to $750 per tree is more an accurate number.
Page 27. There's the maintenance responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's an intent to have the length of time
Right.
You know, because I don't know if the developer would be gone by that point. I assume that it would be like the homeowners association would take that on. So, I would say 3 years would be a minimum.
Okay.
5 would be the maximum, but if we're going to put a number in there, I would suggest 3.
Okay.
Should we distinguish between new plantings and possibly damage for significant trees in other critical zones?
Right, specify what exactly you're bonding.
That's a good point. That's what I couldn't quite get that wrapped around. Is that,
so
that
new
post-care, category?
Okay, so new plantings would fall under our landscape standards and be 2 years, the 2 year bond. This would be for any trees that require post care. I don't know if I would have to ask Jim if we need to bond for the trees that were retained. So if you see on page 28, where'd it go?
I think what you're 19. Saying is the post-care should be 3 years minimum. I think that's where you're coming from.
Post-care should be 3 years, and then we do require a bond during construction.
And
that's,
I guess it's what I was mentioning with the plantings is, we fall with this landscape plans. We can't change that right now.
We can't. We're going to be revising
be bringing
that
it back
code.
Here, though, that one.
We could change that to 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because reason I was suggesting a number was because it says a maintenance schedule shall be developed. It doesn't give
a target time frame. Okay.
So it sounds like we should also make reference to any new plantings should be maintained pursuant
per landscaping, and I thought that was in here.
It does reference 1818 a few times. Which is the landscape code.
Installation and maintenance should be pursuant to the landscape standards. We are in supplemental trees planted to meet the minimum density requirements. So they are referenced to fall under that 1818 for installation and maintenance. And then we can address that.
There doesn't seem to be a plan for those trees that have been affected through exceptions to the critical weed zone.
Right. So we'll add that in at the top of 18 under, and that would be transferred to the homeowners, like you said.
Site mitigation, or is on-site mitigation implied, and then the $2,500 is a fine in addition to that replacement?
Right. The amount would go into the city's tree fund. Then they would be required to meet the code, which says, if you have to replant and replace.
And I think in many cases today, given the fact that we've had a very aggressive parks program, that we're doing everything we can to not just get the land, but have the parks improved. And I would guess that a lot of that money is going into the parks. As well as what we're doing now, much more than we ever have in the past, is if a developer is dedicating a park within his development, I think, or his or her development, we are trying to get them to do the improvement of the park as credit against their park fees. And that is just a fairly recent thing. But particularly in the multifamily, for instance, in the Dahlgren project, we would rather, when they finish phase one, that the park is done, finished, they can have it done cheaper than we can because we go out and we're using prevailing wages and it just blows the heck out of the budget, and they can do it with their own contractors. They're also doing the park design, and we're having our park commission review the design. So it's more of a turnkey thing than just dedicated to us, and then eventually it gets developed. We'd like to have it finished when the project is finished. And I think we're going to have more of that done, so we'll have less RP money, but we'll have more delivered, completed parks.
Anybody in this room tell me where you came from, where the city owns the trees on my property? How did that come about? If I buy a lot, I own my home, and everything inside that lot, what I need the city for is a permit to let me deal with what I need to deal with, and only do it safely.
Right.
Tell me that I can't kick a tree down, right, or the city money is ridiculous.
Is that what we do now?
No. And you would be exempt from needing a permit if you're not proposing any development. So this is just for if you are developing.
Well, it's down here on 28, paragraph 2. Talks about the landlord has to notify the city, and the city will charge them.
Right, so this is a, under C on line 24. This is for a new development site.
Okay,
so
what about 30, page 30. Number
well, let's
five.
Stick with six.
I'm saying that. Mm-hmm.
You're saying that once you buy the lot, and we, and this applies, and you decide you want to take a tree down, do you
if
then have
the
to get
are bonded and to the city, and if we, if the owner takes the tree out. Unless it's a hazardous tree, he just takes it out because he wants to have different use of his property.
Right. So if you're gonna, if you buy a lot and you're gonna develop it, then you would be subject to these.
No.
If you're not,
if
then
you buy a lot where it
has a home and it has
house
trees,
is on it,
house,
it's a new home, and we've met the code
right.
by planning on the lot.
Then you're exempt, and that's on page 30. Existing single-family lot homeowners are exempt. Line 21. Right.
Are significant trees.
So, yeah. So it.
Unless it's exceptional.
Right.
Exceptional.
Unless it's exceptional. Mm-hmm.
Are exceptional trees then protected beyond?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would pertain to exceptional trees, not to
other trees.
Those that didn't qualify.
Right.
But David, I can't get past online. Tree retention requirements, such trees are removed by the permit. Property owners shall be responsible for paying a fee based upon the appraised landscape value.
Right. It's saying that trees that are shown on the plan to be retained as part of the minimum density requirement shall be retained. So if you come in, I say, I want to develop, you have a plan that says, I'm going to retain this, and then you don't, then that's your hammer. Then this doesn't apply to you.
I think that's the key.
Yeah.
Later on, there is an exemption
right.
language that takes precedent over.
Because number two starts out, trees that are shown on a plan to be retained as part of a minimum tree density requirement shall be retained. If you're not a new development, you don't have a tree plan that shows you have to retain, then you don't have to retain.
And on C as well, 24, it says on new development sites.
Okay, so I'm a lot of land use guy planning this on a website and see.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I read this.
So permit exemptions would be your first thing to go through and say, am I exempt? Do I need a permit? No, you do not. And then you're done. You don't have to read, you know, the rest.
It's true.
So I think what Dick is saying is that because it could be misconstrued,
right.
is there anything we can put in here that would say that under enforcement at the very beginning, that these regulations under enforcement whatever the section is,
right,
apply only to new development and not to the individual property owner once the lot has been sold, something like that. Mm-hmm. Somebody clarify.
Yeah, because that would be...
Yeah, I mean, that's our intent, and that's what that's the way we would interpret it, but it needs to be clearer to the reader.
Okay, that would be the extreme interpretation that I would take away from Councilmember Patterson when she talks about retaining trees.
Well, and you could get a planner that doesn't get it, too. I've had that happen to me when I was a developer on the other side of the counter, so if you can make it clearer, it doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah. Can we just address that in the title of the chapter of the section?
Mm-hmm.
Proposed draft amendments to tree regulations for new developments?
Well, I think that the place where you'd really, if you're worried about where the particular provision is that you could misinterpret, and that's generally an enforcement, because enforcement happens after you've met the requirement of the plan, right? It might be a little more meaningful if you put it in the enforcement section. It says these regulations do not apply to a single family, or do not apply to a lot that has been purchased after development. They are to apply to the development process.
Mm-hmm.
Make it a little clearer.
Yeah,
I get it.
Haven't heard from him on that because we've been grappling with it. As I said, he went out on Rob's site and had more discussions, and we had discussions about it. You know, theoretically, this is how it could look different, but there's just so many scenarios that, and I asked Kirkland too for one and the other city, and they didn't have anything great to provide either, since every site is unique. So I'll talk to him again. Scheduling-wise, we'd have the hearing at the next meeting on the 22nd, and go from there.
I'd just like to say that, as a commissioner on the panel, I think this particular area of discussion is one of the most vital in the city right now, and we need to take great care of how we deal with this. And what we are, I'm just saying,
right,
and how much care needs to be done to it. How to protect the integrity of the long-term plan of the community, but also the individual property rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right of a way where it's very clear what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's obvious that we're heading down the wrong path in terms of tree retention number. But we're swinging back the other way almost too hard to find the balance.
Mm-hmm. That's really the purpose of your input, purpose of their input, purpose of the council. And there's, you can see tonight, we've got some changes.
Mm-hmm.
The push pull we have in the middle of this are people that are heavy duty advocates on both sides of the issue.
Yeah, when we had our hearing back in March for the dockets, I don't know if you guys remember, but there were some emotional comments from people related to the trees. So it does affect people.
Move to adjourn.
Well, we congratulate the election of a new chair.
I tried to make one right there.
Yeah. No, you've got one.
Second?
Second.
Who seconded? Sorry. That was
second.
You did. Okay.